Hello and welcome back to My First Dungeon Honey Heist, the tabletop role-playing podcast where we put first-time game masters through their paces as we build and run their very first one-shot, and then circle back around to discuss what went right, what went wrong, and how they can make their games even better. This is the final part of our three-part series where we take a look back at Chinook's first time running the fantastic one-page RPG, Honey Heist, and talk about the highlights and see how he thinks he can improve now that he successfully has a game under his belt. Chinook, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me back, Brian.
Always, man. How you feeling?
I'm happy it's over. I'm feeling good. Happy it's done. I felt good about it. It was a lot of fun. It was definitely stressful, but now having done it, I'm like, oh, I could do this again, and it would be much more fun and much more easier.
Hell yeah. I had so much fun playing. You know, I never get to play, so anytime I get to play, I am thrilled. But as I've said before on the show, I am not an expert on Honey Heist, so I'm once again joined by the absolute best person to talk about this game, its creator, Grant Howitt. Welcome back, Grant.
Hello. Thank you for having me back.
Before we kind of get into how it went, the good, the bad, the highs, the lows, the easies, the toughs, Chinook, can you give us like a 1 or 2 minute recap of what happened on your Honey Heist?
Yeah, I'll channel my inner Brian.
Hell yeah.
Last time on Honey Heist. Chinook, the unhinged panda bear, was just trying to enjoy the Knicks game at MSG when he got a tip from his old friend Tristan that there was a big loot at this year's HoneyCon. Quickly understanding that this was his big chance to make a name for himself, he set out to gather his crew. His first stop was the Barnum & Bailey Circus, where he found Ahmed, the grizzly bear father of one of Chinook's ex-girlfriends, who had no recollection of Chinook despite Chinook spending Thanksgiving with them that year. Chinook pitched the heist, and after being a bit hesitant, Ahmed bought in when he found out that he could afford 50 golden fezes with his share of the loot. The two then set off to the golf course, where Ahmed's old crewmate Slick, the honey badger, drove golf carts as a caddy. Upon seeing Ahmed and Chinook, Slick quickly recognized his old friend, and he also recognized that Chinook had also dated his own daughter. Slick quickly dropped his job for an opportunity at another heist, and then they all left to grab the brains of their old crew, Filbert, who they found at Nino's Pizzeria on Staten Island, playing a high-stakes game of Go Fish, which quickly escalated and led to Ahmed severing the hand of Tony, but luckily doing this allowed doctors to find out that Tony had early stages of wrist cancer. After settling the Tony debacle, Chinook, who had also dated Filbert's daughter, convinces Filbert to do one last heist with him, and the crew begin planning. The day of the heist, Slick is driving the team in his obnoxiously large limo. He causes a huge accident due to some classic Staten Island road rage. When he pulls into the truck convoys, Filbert gives the tickets to the scanner guy. They're quickly identified as fakes, leading to animal control being called as the entry plan quickly collapses. Ahmed cuts the hands off of all the people trying to stop them, and Slick creates a huge distraction by destroying the parking garage, creating cover for the gang to run into HoneyCon without anyone pursuing them. The gang gets in, grabs a map, and heads over to the beekeeper's pavilion, where they meet a lonely beekeeper, Linda. Taking advantage of her clear lack of understanding of how friends works, she divulges all of her secrets to them immediately, including that she's been sleeping with the big boss of the entire thing. Linda invites them to watch the announcement of the Blue Mansion, where they see Bluvius Maximus, the bear that's running HoneyCon, announce that one lucky ticket holder will be gifted the briefcase full of pure Manuka honey extract worth $5 million. Not wanting to wait for the winner to be announced, the guys convince Linda to profess her love to the big boss. She asks them to go with her, and Linda quickly takes them inside, getting access to the Big Blue Mansion. Even though those doors are electronically locked, she uses her keycard to get them in. When she takes them to the inner vault room, Bluvius stumbles upon them. Filbert draws a gun on Bluvius and forces him to take them to Papa. Walking towards the vault, the gang realizes this isn't any ordinary Blue Mansion. This is the mansion of the Disney Junior star, Bear in the Big Blue House. As the vault opens, the old grizzly is sitting on a throne surrounded by opulent honey. Linda professes her love to the bear, but he quickly rejects her. Filbert shoots the bear in the Big Blue House's right hand right off. And as he does this, Bluvius tries to wrestle the gun away, blasting Filbert's right hand right off there at the same time. As Bluvius goes to take another shot, he whiffs it, drops the gun. Slick goes full bear and kills Bluvius. As Slick goes full bear, he starts eating all the honey and is no longer able to help his gang. The bears then realize that the police have been alerted and they're on the way, a SWAT team approaching shortly. Wilbert reveals that after he found out Tony got a robotic hand, he visited the same doctor and got one installed on himself. Using his robotic hand to detach, he grabs the briefcase, and as Slick watches his friends struggle to get out of this situation, he remembers how he once promised to get sober off of honey after the last heist. He did with the... And after he does this, he comes to, and the crew takes off. The bears quickly go through a detour through the kids' room that has access to the helipad on top of the trucks. Ahmed unsuccessfully tries to slash open the door, but then after seeing the handle is shaped like bamboo, Shanook chomps down to unlock the door. As the crew runs up to the helipad, they see a Knicks-themed chopper, and coming out of it is owner of the Knicks, James Dolan. Slick, infuriated by James Dolan, throws him off the truck convoy, killing James Dolan, and New York is now safer for some reason. As they hop into the helicopter, Slick starts going full bear again, and his old friend Filbert restrains him, and as Shanook and Ahmed figure out how to fly a chopper, it seems all is well. Filbert, looking ahead, pounds down some honey and goes full bear with his old friend Slick as they fly off into the sunset.
Hell.
That's what happened.
Yeah, now that's a game. That's a game right
boy
there.
Meets girl. Classic story, one of the greats.
They say there's really only one tale in all of storytelling.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
We covered it.
I guess to start out, Shanook, when you were running it, what were some of your favorite parts of this game?
Just actually, I'm really sorry to interrupt. One thing I want to make clear, Shanook was also the name of one of the characters.
Oh, yes.
Which is something I want to make super clear, because it was strange to me hearing it when I heard it through. But Shanook was the real name of the GM and the character name of the panda bear, almost as, I think, a sort of taunt against you.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely was.
Yeah, okay. Was that I wasn't quite aware of the dynamics on the show, but was that guy your mate? Who named himself
he's an old friend.
There is some inside baseball here in that all of the Staten Island jokes were because Shanook is from Staten Island, which is the butt of all New Yorker jokes. Any of the jokes about Ohio were because I'm from Ohio, so Ohio's easy to play on. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then Shanook was we were just giving Shanook shit, I guess.
I wanted to get ahead of that, because from Shanook's description, he may have been describing himself to the energy. So sorry, please, Brian, please go ahead and ask that question.
Of course. So Shanook, the GM, Shanook the player, what were some of your favorite bits from this game? Like, what do you think went just spectacularly?
What went spectacularly? That is a great question. I really enjoyed Filbert's intro scene. I think that was a lot of fun, mm-hmm. just because it got all of you guys in the room. And then you were in a pizzeria that's like very familiar to me. Like, it somehow became Danino's Pizzeria on Staten Island without like my intention of it becoming that place, which like was just easy in and of itself to create that space and that world. And then the whole bit about cutting off his right hand and that curing his cancer, and then I think Nathan really took that to like heighten that to like a spectacular, like did not expect. And that was like Ahmed's recurring joke after that of like, he's just slicing off people's hands left and right. I think that was probably my favorite little bit that we created together.
It was very fun. It was just the joke happened early enough that we could just keep hitting it. And it was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
Grant, as you were listening through, were there any moments that like stood out to you as being particularly fun or like particularly notably honey heist moments? You know what I mean?
One of my favorite bits in any Honey Heist game is when there's clearly a plan and the plan has gone wrong. And then one of the players is like, wait, I'm a fucking bear. It doesn't matter. And so they start mauling everyone. There's very little you can do to stop someone who's got a high bear rating, aside from like some sort of pit trap. So I think it was the scene where you had guns pulled on you and you were trying to break in and you'd just been like they'd been rolling their failures through and through and through, like for a really simple hold up this ID card.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Pass. And to have like, well, I'm gonna cut off everyone's hand. Like that seemed like that's the sort of spike of energy, I think, which typifies any heist games.
We had a couple of those moments too where, you know, like Nathan towards the end, Bluvius was like running towards a button. Everyone was like talking for a couple minutes, like, oh, what do we do? What do we do? And Nathan's like, well, no, wait, I have a gun. I point the gun at him. Stop. Shanook, from when you started planning to what actually happened, ballpark percentage, what percentage of your plans do you think actually got enacted versus how much do you think you had to make up on the spot?
Like 5% of the things I had planned happened. and then everything else was on the spot immediately. You guys were absolute monsters, forcing me to do a bunch of things I did not expect to have to do. I think the only thing that I had planned that like I was like, this is happening no matter what, was like the bear in the big blue house. Like, this is going to happen. And that's the only thing that happened.
And that is a bit of maybe a U.S. specific thing. So for anyone not familiar with Bear in the Big Blue House, it's a Disney Channel children's show from like the early aughts, late 90s. And the whole thing, there's a big blue house and there's a man in a giant bear puppet suit that goes around and does like, I don't know, tell stories. And then every night he talks to the moon and the moon like sings him to sleep. That's a very cute cartoon that I have not thought about in 15 plus years. But I love the reveal of the bear in the big blue house. It's honestly kind of the same thing Abby did. I think one shots are really good for like these like kind of pun reveals, these fun like joke reveals. In her one shot did, it was a Western theme. And the whole time we're trying to figure out like who's the bad guy. And we realize it's Jolene from the Dolly Parton song. Jolene, Jolene.
She was just describing her in terms of her auburn hair. And
exactly.
Like
yeah. Yeah. And slowly we built, and then like there's a moment right before she says it where everyone goes, oh. and then of course at the end of that, like the magic item we're trying to get has like a mystical keyword on it that's like weird written. We realize it's my man, because we're begging, darling, please don't take my man. It's very fun.
Yeah, you can get away with a lot of shit in one shots, and indeed writing the games. It doesn't have to hold together a great amount. Like, you've given a lot of leeway.
I know when we came into this, you were concerned about not being able to like improv our choices, maybe like kind of forcing players to do one thing and not honoring their choices, whatever. I think we definitely put that to the test with this.
You did so well, Shanique. You did amazingly well. I really feel like Brian might have bought in, like, what's the word, a ringer? Because you've role played enough. Perhaps you've done some sort of improv training, but the way in which you were able to like to have someone effectively throw a challenge at your feet, and then for you to pick it up and then run with it and go, yeah, and this happens, yeah, and this is the thing. And the players gave you so much right at the start, and you kept that, and you kept sort of throwing it back at them, and you kept, rather than inventing something new, drawing it back to the things which were established initially, which is how you make an interesting story. And yeah, you did it really well. I think like there was no sign that you were struggling.
Aww. I feel that means a lot. Wow, that's the whole experience I think was like as if I had woken up and someone was like, all right, drive this plane, and I was like, I can't do this. And then after a while, I figured out which buttons to click. And I was like, oh, what if I click this button? And then things kind of like started freaking out. And I, you know, unclick it. It didn't feel like that in the moment. I definitely think I felt like I was struggling. But I think, I don't know, it was a lot of fun regardless of what happened. So,
and I would say like while playing, it never came across as you were struggling. It was just like you took, I think what I always find is when I'm DMing, when it feels like 10 seconds of thinking, it really is like a second of thinking, and everyone's like, oh, okay, he's just naturally pausing to breathe before he speaks, rather than, oh, what's happening? My brain's freaking out. Yeah, no, there was never a time when someone threw something at you and you said no. It was always yes. I mean, it was classic improv, yes, and it was always heightening, it was always drawing from the world and like amplifying the world. And I think we probably could have been kinder to you, because like as I was listening back, I'm sure there were
a little bit.
there were a few times where I'd like realize you had dropped clues and we had completely ignored them. I realized in the Danino's Pizzeria there was a whole thing about like, yeah, we're gonna be giving out raffle tickets and the raffle winner wins the honey. We never touched that. No one ever discussed it.
Yeah, I totally was like, oh, like the easy way to do this is just wait till they give away the honey and then steal the honey from that guy that wins it. And you guys are like, nah, we're going to go inside and fuck shit up, which is like the fun thing to do, right?
Yeah.
But I felt like it was nice being in a room full of people who like were like fun and like not like, yes, you guys were dicks, but like not dicks in like the mean spirited way.
Yeah.
Like in the let's have fun and be dicks at the same time. Which was like nice, and like I didn't feel super uncomfortable of like, oh, okay, I have to like control the story, make everything funny. Like, you guys made most of the things funny and like fun for me. which made the entire game much easier to play.
And I think it is important, like, we specifically for the show, I always like ask whoever the DM is, like whoever the game master is, who they'd want to play with to make it as comfortable as possible for the first time running a game. I think the only person you had never met was Nathan.
Yeah, and Nathan was great.
And Nathan's a good friend of mine. He's a very, very fun guy. I knew he would fit in well. But everyone else you had like good relationships with. So when you are doing something you're nervous about doing for the first time and that you think will be difficult, it makes it a lot easier and more fun, like better chance to succeed when you're with people who know you, who like you, and who are actively trying to help you, even if that help sometimes is throwing shit your way that you may or may not be able to handle. You know, but it's fun. We kind of talked about what you were worried about beforehand and like kind of how that played out on the day. And I think killed it. Like, as far as not being like worrying about not being able to improv, worrying about not being able to honor our choices. As a player, I never felt that. Like, there wasn't even a moment where I was like, oh, I kind of wanted to do this and he made me do this. It was like, no, every choice I made was honored, whether or not they should have been. Like, every now and then I'm like, oh, maybe you should have said no.
That's, yeah. I may have been too lenient.
Which is, you know, great. From the session, what surprised you as being either easier or harder than you expected?
I think Grant gave me some advice in session one of like, create props and like things for the like characters to play with. And I was like, all right, yeah, that should be pretty easy. And then in doing it, it was like really hard to like specifically give props to people. Like there were times where like, I was like, oh yeah, like Art's characters who was playing Chinook, the panda bear. I was like, oh, like I need to like make things more bamboo looking specifically because like I just like I'm not doing that and he's not being able to use his skill. And then there was like a moment like we were like maybe an hour into the game and Nathan was like, I haven't gotten to climb anything. I was like, oh my God, I forgot to like give descriptions of things that Nathan could climb to use his skill. And so it's like, I think it was also understanding like, cause this was the first time Art and Vivek were really playing like a tabletop RPG. So they, you know, sometimes players will like ask like, oh, like what is this thing? Like, is there this thing in the room? Like you were asking like, oh, can I see if there's a car so you could use your driving skills, right? And that's like something like a player that's who's played before he does. He's like, oh yes, like there's probably something like this. I just have to ask for it. Whereas like the Vague and Art, we're doing that because like they just, you know, it's not something you think of the first time you're playing a tabletop game. So it's like up to the GM to kind of like prompt them in a way to like, hey, there's this thing if you want to try and do it. Which like I kind of caught on with Art a little bit. I did a bad job with Nathan's character, I think. And the fact that like Ahmed was just a strong guy, he could just do whatever he wanted. It was a bit easier, but creating those props and like intentionally doing that for the newer characters was just something I that was hard and slipped my mind a lot.
You landed on another thing that I want to kind of commend you for in that of your four players, two of them, I believe, had never played any kind of tabletop role-playing game. Nathan and I have both played pretty extensively, but Art and Vivek never played. And I haven't spoken with Vivek, but at least I've spoken with Art, and he didn't know tabletop role-playing games could be fun. Like, was coming into this, you know, thought it sounded fun, but had no idea, and left feeling like, oh, wow, this is a world I want to explore more. Like it was actively enjoying it. And it can be really tough as a first time player coming in, just not knowing the kind of like language of tabletop role playing games. Like, yes, we explained the rules. Yes, we kind of like talked through the very specific rules for Honey Heist. But kind of the standard moves, or like if you hand someone a video game controller, yeah, you can tell them what the goal of the game is. If they've never pressed the buttons before, it's going to take them a minute. And I think the way you set up the world and the way you like guided the players through allowed Vivek and Art to like very quickly be fully immersed and be fully in. Like, it only took them 5, 10, 15 minutes before they were right up there playing in the same, using the same like terminology and kind of base knowledge as me and Nathan. And I think that's like very much to your credit of creating a very open and easy space to play with it.
The best prop which you put in was the beekeeper daughter who didn't have any friends, because like that's the thing, like I think perhaps demeaning to describe someone as a prop in story terms. It's like your role as a GM, I believe, is twofold. On one hand, you need to find adventure and find challenged excitement wherever the players look, and two, you have to give them what they want. And so, like, if people are desperate to lie to and be generally silly to an NPC, giving them an NPC who's like, yeah, okay, that's fine. They can just ride that joke around and have tremendous fun with it. You did very well there.
Looking back at our first episode, I know you said the advice from Grant about props was really helpful to you and like really helped you think about this game. Were there any other big pieces of advice that you thought were key things that you used to kind of like make this successful Honey Heist?
Yeah, definitely. I think establishing like relationships up top was super helpful. I do think like I did have in my notes like circled, it like starred, make two of these bears divorce, and then in creating our characters, I totally like that page was like stuck to another page, so I just missed the note. And then I was like, I knew there was something I'm missing here, but I don't know what it is. And then we moved on, and like half of the game was like, oh my god, I was supposed to make one of these guys divorce from each other, and then really, really whiff that one. But the next Honey Heist, I'm there's going to be two divorces.
The fact that you had a character who dated all of their daughters
was so good.
That's great, because they've got their own backstory as their own sort of high school, and they can come up with whatever nonsense you've got there. And then you've got this weird panda bear who fucks daughters, who's just turning up. But the fact that like he was at Thanksgiving, you've got like all you need is about seven words to go, oh, you remember that time when? And then people can just start spinning off it themselves. And they did. You gave them the agency that you needed. And I think like, but by establishing up front that this world is malleable and nothing matters until we've said it, but we understand this sort of shared consensus, it let them build the story themselves. I think it was when your man had, as it turns out, he had a robot hand.
Yeah.
And you'd built a world which allowed him to go, actually, fuck it, I've got a robot hand. and you'd allowed that level of freewheeling, and you should be celebrated for that.
Nice. Yeah.
I do think we figured out the joy of the flashbacks. Like once we started figuring out the flashback, we were like, oh wait, more of this. This is fun. And then it like really climaxed when Nathan went back and had a robot hand. Like that was, I think we needed another hour to just like really fuck around with
the fact that they were in the same pizzeria, which you effectively robbed. Well, this is the only place that we can have our flashback meetings. All right, boys, pull up a chair. It was lovely. I liked that a lot.
It really fleshes out the world of Staten Island that all crime is done through one Danino's pizzeria. God, it was so much fun. It's such a fun game.
It was so good. It was so, so good. And there was one more piece of advice that Grant gave me. Oh, and then like the advice of like, if they do like, you know, there are three steps to getting things done. It was like helpful and kind of like, just like realizing, okay, like they've done enough. They can have like, there's, let's just end it and get this over with. They've done the work to get the thing, and they've, you know, I've presented them the challenges, and they've given me solutions to get out of the challenges. That was helpful.
Totally. The next little thing I want to talk about is a segment on the show that I call Left on the Dungeon Floor. So this is like the shit they should have shown, all the stuff that you had in your notes that we didn't get to see. Give us a little peek about some of the stuff we could have done that you had planned that we completely ignored or never got to.
There was going to be I spent like maybe like an hour or two like making this entire map of like the convention center.
And I
like,
could I just, hear it like, in your voice when you were describing the B video games. I think you mentioned something.
Yeah.
Like
yeah,
you were describing the con, and I'm like, oh, cool. That's three scenes. And they're like, nah, fuck that.
Yeah, they absolutely, you took the first, like the Beekeeper's Pavilion was just like this like lonely, like I really didn't have a plan for that. You guys kind of forced me to. I didn't think you were gonna I think my plan for the Beekeeper's Pavilion was like, oh, it's gonna be empty, so like if they need to hide somewhere they can hide there and no one's gonna bother them. And then there was like the mansion, obviously, and then there was like a bunch of stands with honey stuff. There was like an artist performer space where I was gonna have like a bunch of bears that they like had caught at previous HoneyCons, like they're forced to like perform there.
Oh,
and
man,
you guys could have convinced them to like help you with the hype. Yeah, some dark shit.
Move over, World of Darkness. We've got a new contender.
And then there was a like writers, like authors space where like you would see a bunch of just like famous people who come to HoneyCon and like have all this. There was just going to be a bunch of juicy information for you there. There was like security desks. We could have gone into like hack the system and like figure out like unlock the doors and like the vault and do all these things. But I also realized like at that point, because you were giving me the like time, like where we're at, I was like, they can explore one place at best, and we have to just get this thing rolling. So I realized I created too much for us to explore in this one shot, and like, it's fine at the end of the day.
It's all yeast, which is the way that I try to describe it. And like, if you create something, it's a bit like how some kitchens have like an open mother of yeast, which they continue like keep ticking over. Anything you create, even if you never use it in a game, is still the act of creation is useful, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's also one of those things where you've created all these like little tools you could drop into any other future game, you know, kind of piecemeal.
Well, not any game.
Okay, not any game. but the general idea of things you could kind of move around. Yeah, it's a good point. Yeah, the other constriction you were kind of under, making your job harder and harder. You didn't know what the game was when you came in. You had two first-time players. You'd never run a game before. You're doing it for a podcast to be recorded. And I gave you a time limit. I was like, well, I want to keep this episode under 2 hours. So every half an hour, I was sliding you a little piece of paper that said, hey, we're 30 minutes in, 60 minutes in, 90 minutes in, 2 hours in. And all of those were tackled. All of these things I threw at you didn't matter. And that was the stuff outside of the game, not even within the game, of four different people trying to break down this world as best they could to do the thing they wanted to do, which is really fucking fun.
I would also say that you did a really good job of presenting Honey Heist, HoneyCon, as a straight man for the bears to be agents of chaos in.
Mm-hmm.
And I think like one of the temptations I've seen from a lot of new GMs and a lot of people who are maybe new to one-shots is that the environment is wacky. Because it's an easy way to make humor. You make it really silly and what have you. And it's like, well, we've already got bears in hats with guns, so it doesn't matter. But it does matter. You have to try and keep it as mundane as you can whilst being ridiculous. So the fact that the bear pulls a gun remains funny. So having everything be a bit rubbish was really useful. And you should be lauded for that.
And there's a thing there, just kind of in general, like if you're trying to play something for comedy and make it funny, comedy is all about comparison and contrast. If you make something that is wacky and then wacky things happen in it, well, it's just a wacky world. If you make a grim, dark, serious world and then a bear pulls a gun, there's comedy there.
Mm.
It's just a lot of, you know, easy way to do it.
You need to give yourself room.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's also, you know, what I was saying before, you just created the space, you created the atmosphere, which is, as any game master would tell you, is tough. Like, that's not something you usually do your first time out of the gate. You know, I know for my personal experience, I focused like too much on the monsters I was going to use, or the this or the that, and failed to create a proper environment to like really let people play and explore and have fun.
Yeah, my first GMing was absolute cock. I was 13 years old. And it was in the back of a book. It's called, like, you know, like fighting fantasy books. It used to have like, used to roll the dice and have this. It was like Choose Your Own Adventure, but with skill checks.
Oh,
they're very popular in the UK.
Cool. That's cool. I've never heard of that.
Yeah. Imagine a Choose Your Own Adventure game, but if you roll a one, you have to stop playing the game. So it's not quite as cool as it sounds. But we had it had four full pages of flavor text to read at the start of the game, and we got through one room of goblins, and then my friends and I watched German pornography on illegal satellite TV instead, which was much better. So yeah, you did much better than me, Shinny. You're a little older, I don't know.
I'm just a little tad.
Yeah.
But you also weren't competing with German pornography. So, I mean,
that's, well, we're all always competing with German pornography. It's more accessible than ever.
It's a thing to remember. Anytime you start slacking, remember, you're competing with German pornography. Step it up. Keep working. Nose to the grindstone. The Germans won't stop. Okay, so we've kind of covered our how this game went. I think Grant and I both agree. As I said in the episode one, I'm a proud Papa Bear. I thought it was fucking great. I had fun playing. I had fun listening back. I had fun editing it. It was super wacky and fun. After this experience, I know you were nervous going in. I really threw a lot at you. You handled it all with grace and cunning. Do you think you want to run a game again, either of Honey Heist or of something else?
Yeah, I think I've been texting friends and being like, hey, you want to play Honey Heist? And like, I pitched them the game and I'm like trying to get a little group together, to like just play for without like the constrictions of a podcast. Mm-hmm. I think I want to try that out relatively soon. I would love to do that.
Brian, and, do you ever ask that question and people say no?
I've only had it twice.
I'm just trying to imagine the tremendous drop in energy. That like we spend multiple hours getting this person get up. Do you want to do it again? No, thank you, Brian.
You know,
can we stop recording?
To be fair, I do set it up as a pretty leading question. I only ask it when I'm pretty sure there's a high chance of success.
I hope that you have fun off mic as well recording. But that's the thing, because having your first game that you're running on a show is a vastly different experience from having the first game, from running a game just for your mates around a table or over a Zoom chat. Mm-hmm. And in some ways, I prefer doing stuff for podcasts because there's an element of performance, and it's like, right, like we're going to effectively jam together and make something and then put it out there and people can listen to it. But there's something really nice about like, we're going to improvise a story and it's just for us. And like I'm in charge of the tone. You're in charge of the characters. Let's see what happens. And I think, yeah, I hope you have fun with it.
Yeah, thanks, Grant. I'm really excited. It's been like a wild, 3 months now, Brian, of me diving into tabletop RPGs, and pretty sure I'm addicted at this point. I want to play more. I want to do more. I'm also going to start DMing a game of D&D soon. So.
Yeah,
I got hooked.
Yeah, you stop buying the hardback books. That's what we need. Maybe you charge you so much for one page, guys.
Fair enough. Got to start contributing my my dues.
Yeah, you got to start tithing to the tabletop role playing gods here.
No, I think that the two and a half hour advert that you put together for Honey Heights is probably enough. I think we're okay.
I've only got one more big thing I want to talk about. Is there anything either of you wanted to bring up before I kind of move into last piece of advice type thing?
There is a sentence in the game which says, as a bear, you cannot speak. You cannot speak human. You can sort of mangle human speech. That is very different from what occurred in the game.
And
I am thankful for that. Because every time I run Honey Heist, the closest we get to a tense negotiation scene is someone going, or I have to introduce other bears for them to talk to, or a goose or something. Because right off the bat, we've got, not only are these bears capable of driving, of doing stunt driving, but they are capable of talking to celebrities and indeed having opinions on those celebrities. To those celebrities. And that meant that we just got we got a lot of interplay between different characters, especially between all the gangsters in the bar and between the different NPCs that you met. And it was a lot of fun. And the fact that you were bears was something which I almost think people had to be occasionally reminded of. it was a useful pressure release valve for this daft heist you're running. There's oh, by the way, fuck it, I maul everyone because I'm a bear. I think that was, yeah, that was lovely, but it is definitely not how the game is written. There was that really lovely moment where I think it was Brian's character walked into the bar, took off his hat and slicked his hair back.
Yeah.
And then for a split second, it's like, oh my God, it's a fucking bear! But he put the hat back on. And I was... Your levels of humanity were relatively high, but it definitely worked out for you.
I was just about to say, yeah, there's a sentence that there's a rule that you can't speak to humans that I think I obviously whiffed completely. I remember after the game op was like, hey, man, by the way, you know, there's a rule that says we can't talk to humans. I was like, oh, yeah, I just, you know, for the podcast, I felt like it was more annoying to to make the scenes a bit longer. So I was like, oh, we just gotta, you know, put that rule to the side. And I was like, oh, fuck me.
We picked four very loquacious people. There's no way we weren't going to talk. We would have had full conversations by mumbling. Okay, I think the last thing I want to do before we get out of here, Chinook, now that you have played through a game successfully, a more loquacious game than it was maybe intended, but a successful game of Honey Heist with plans to do another. The entire first part was Grant giving you advice about how to run a game. What advice do you have for future players of Honey Heist now that you have gone through this experience once yourself? Is there anything that you want to highlight that Grant said in episode one or in this episode, or something you've kind of discovered on your own that you think would be helpful?
Yeah, I think I listened to your first episode with Grant, where Grant said, if you're going to start doing a tabletop, if you're going to do your first, like GM your first tabletop RPG, don't do a one page RPG. Absolutely true. Don't start with that.
I told you not to let him listen to that.
I tried to keep him away, but he subscribes to the newsletter. So
even like that being said, it was still a lot of fun and not as like difficult to do as I thought it would be. Having listened to that episode, I think it really is just surrounding yourself with people who are like just down to clown and are like not, you know, are just like willing to like go on this journey with you and learn with you in the moment. And have like, you could put together a basic plan to make yourself feel good about it. Just know that it's probably not going to happen. Most likely you're going to have to improvise on the spot and it's going to be fine. It's going to be cool. And all of the fun is not put on you. Your players will create the fun with you. I think that is the big thing I'm walking away from this. It's like, oh, I just have to create the world and the fun will just happen. I don't have to create those funny moments. They'll just happen organically with the players. And then read the rules, man. Just read all the rules. Don't panic. When you're creating characters and looking through the rule sheet, don't panic. And you have time. You can breathe. You don't have to rush through everything. I think that's one of my biggest things that I did. I just kind of like, oh, I have to like give this answer now and have all these things done now. Where it's like, no, you can take a breath and like take your time. There's no huge rush to say a word. Take a second and then say something.
What you were saying reminded me, there's an Eisenhower quote I really like, that plans are useless, but planning is essential. Like you're going to make your plan. You're going to make all these big things. It's going to go to shit. But the act of building, the act of creating, the act of like getting yourself in the headspace and in the world is going to be miles and miles more valuable than the actual nitty gritty things you create. Because quite frankly, your players will, no matter what you try, will always blow shit up. I don't think I've ever had a session run according to plan, or even 50% according to plan.
If a session runs entirely to plan, write a fucking book.
Exactly.
Don't just write a novel and get it out of your system, because otherwise that's just people trying to guess what you're thinking.
And that's not what we're here for. We're here to have fun. We're here to go mad, crazy, bonkers. And we're here to steal some goddamn honey. Mm-hmm. That is all for this episode of My First Dungeon Honey Heist. Thank you so much to our first time GM, Chinook. Chinook, can you tell the people where they can find you if they want to find you online?
Yeah, you can find me at Chinook on Twitter and Instagram, or at Fake Chinook on TikTok.
Hell yeah. And I'll put all those links in the show notes. And a big, big thank you to Grant Howitt for helping us learn this game and for creating Honey Heist. Grant, can you tell the folks where they can find you and what new games you have on the horizon?
Sure. I'm basically everywhere as G-S-H-O-W-I-T-T. That's G-S Howitt. In terms of new games on the horizon, coming out this summer, we have Orkborg, which is a hack of Morkborg featuring orcs, which is great. And coming out today on the day of recording, so it will be live when you hear this, is a game I'm writing with Jion Shen, which is called Captain Swanhands, where you play a superhero, but your some part of your hands are replaced with live animal parts. And it's about the trials and tribulations of trying to hold down an office job.
All right, next season on My First Dungeon, we're going to be playing.
Yeah,
links in the show notes. Go check that shit out. I'm going to be checking that out today. Please be sure to check out all of these games. And even more than that, please play some Honey Heist. If you've listened to this, if you listen to Chinook play, I think you are more than prepared. Get out there, do it. It is very easy to learn. It is incredibly fun to play. And remember, if you are having fun, you're already doing it right. Thanks for listening, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey, everybody. This is Brian, the host of My First Dungeon.
If you've enjoyed listening to this game of Honey Heist and learning about the wild world of one-page RPGs, I encourage you to check out the 20-Sided Newsletter. It's our free, bi-monthly newsletter delivered directly to your inbox. Our latest issue is all about one-page RPGs and features an exclusive interview with Honey Heist creator Grant Howitt, as well as a never-before-seen one-page spy-themed RPG written by, well, by me. I had so much fun learning about one-page RPGs and playing them, I decided to take a stab at it myself. If that sounds interesting to you, you can find the link down in the show notes below, or you can go to 20sidednewsletter.substack.com. Thanks!